I am the best wrestler in the world. I've been the best ever since day one when I walked into this company, and I've been vilified and hated since that day because Paul Heyman saw something in me that nobody else wanted to admit. I've grabbed so many of Vincent K. McMahon's imaginary brass rings that it's finally dawned on me that they're just that. They're completely imaginary. The only thing that's real is me, and the fact that day in and day out, for almost 6 years, I have proved to everybody in the world that I am the best on this microphone, in that ring, even in commentary. Nobody can touch me.
It is ICM Chew, the best Jew in the world, here with a brand new episode of CM Jew's Wrestling Reviews right here on the Absolution Network. I am, of course, Jew, your primetime host. And on episode 57, well, we're covering a pay-per-view I actually wanted to get out at the end of the month, or last month, I should say, of October. But see, the problem is, well, anarchy ruled. Because today we are covering ECW Anarchy Rules 1999, coming from Chicago. And woo, what a pay-per-view it was. A real amazing, I finally got to go back to ECW. It put me on a bit of an ECW kick, as it is. And I'll explain that a little bit later. But, yeah, ECW Anarchy Rules 1999, which would be actually one of Taz's last pay-per-view appearances for the company before he would go off and join the WWE and choke Kurt Angle out of the 2000 Royal Rumble. Before we get to that, we have some things to talk about. And, of course, if I had done this the 2 weeks before, I probably wouldn't have this much to talk about, but, you know, here we are. While we've had two great Raws the past 2 weeks, and then, of course, the new great one, the new legendary future Hall of Famer, the new man of the WWE, Seth friggin' Rollins, goes and, tears his MRL and ACL. I know there's conflicting reports. The one I saw is like from Coach, and that was on WWE. It said that he had torn bits and pieces of both his MRL and ACL in his right knee, and he is gonna look to be out 6 to 8 months. And Seth, if I give you a piece of advice, stay out 68 months. Don't try to be Cena. Look, I'm saying that not because I don't think you can be Cena. I know you can't be Cena. No one can be Cena. CM Punk tried to be John Cena, and it burned him out from wrestling. I don't care what he says about things on his back or money issues. He burned himself out. We all know it. And you can argue with me all you want. And you have your right to argue, but you also have your right to be wrong. So, yeah. Don't try to be Cena. Don't burn yourself out trying to get back. There's a lot of great wrestlers And I am really honestly afraid that he will, I mean, more power to him if he can, he doesn't burn himself out. But at the same point in time, my fear here is that, again, because John Cena has put such a status on getting these major injuries and then coming back in half the time, you know. Whereas other wrestlers can't, they try to do it and then re-injure themselves immediately. I'm very fearful for that, but I'm also fearful because Seth frickin' Rollins comes from NXT, where they have a little saying, you're not here to fill a spot, you're here to take a spot. And let's be honest, this roster is going to be very, very competitive. It's, I think, already a bit competitive now, and it's one of the best damn rosters I think WWE's had in a long time, but I'll be damned if he gets competitive now. Wait till in a couple years when we get people like Samoa Joe and all the guys in NXT, Baron Corbin and Finn Balor and Hideo Itami and all these guys that they have waiting in the wings in NXT to come up. As like, this is going to be a really competitive, really good roster that can make for really great wrestling, hopefully on a weekly basis. And really, I think this is like the best roster WWE's had since, I'd have to say since at least 2006-2007. Yeah, so Seth, get well soon, but take care of yourself, because you're Seth frickin' Rollins, and I guarantee you, you do have a spot waiting for you. But, yeah. I'm really fearful that he's gonna rush himself. But going back, you know, before that injury, is that we had two wonderful Raws. Isn't it amazing what happens when, you know, you have the, and I'm not gonna call him has-beens or what, I'm certainly not calling Undertaker washed, okay. I'm not calling Undertaker washed up and has-been, I'm calling Lesnar washed up and has-been. Because Taker beat his ass. But no, seriously, it's like, when you don't have this lumbering lunk that, really, let's be all honest, we only care about him because it means we get to hear Paul Heyman speak. And I'll watch a genetic jackass flub around the ring for a couple minutes if it means, on a weekly basis, I get to listen to Paul Heyman. I'll do anything to get to listen to Paul Heyman. I think a lot of people would do anything to get to listen to Paul Heyman. But it's not even when he's off and, you know, Undertaker's off that, wow, we actually get good wrestling because the people who are there 365 days a year who actually can do the business right now, you know, are the focus. We're not focused on them. We're not focused on any other Hall of Famers. There are a lot of people saying, oh, adding that, you know, it's also because Cena and Orton are gone. Maybe a little bit of Orton. I don't know about that. Or, I mean, Orton is now a part-timer too, so they don't have to focus on him. I completely disagree with Cena because Cena's whole segments were some of the best things on Raw for the past 9 months. And I'm sure when he gets back, he's going to be right into the groove, and I don't think anything's going to be missed because of it. You have the Divas Revolution. You had last Monday, you had a great Fatal 4-Way in the Divas edition, which included Brie Bella, and if you listened to last week's Riff Down, you heard me and T-Dub get into an argument about that, and you know, it's all right. I don't have any hard feelings. He, you know, it's okay for T-Dub to be wrong from time to time, you know? And, you know, I fully accept his, you know, his surrender and the eventual apology where he tells me I'm right. Because you know it's coming. that was a shoot, folks. But yeah, you had that. Of course, you also had the Fatal 4-Way the week before with Owens, Ziggler, Alberto Del Rio, and Roman Reigns. That was great. And like, it's great to see everybody behind Reigns. Roman Reigns has worked so hard, he deserves that. He, at the time, he deserved the number one contender shot. He's probably most definitely going to be in the tournament that is now going to be debuted tonight on Monday Night Raw. And that's the thing, is I'm looking forward to hopefully a third straight week of Monday Night Raw being awesome. And again, because it's this opportunity for the new kids to step up and grab that brass ring. And again, these are the NXT guys. I mean, there's a reason Triple H is spending all of WWE's profits on buying brass rings, because they keep taking them all. Okay? So, yeah, it's a great opportunity for them, and I'm really looking forward to the tournament. Of course, this is the first tournament that's going to be part of Survivor Series since 1998, and the Deadly Games, which I will be reviewing that Survivor Series later on in the month, by the way. And I'll have a special guest, hopefully, or maybe two, to join me for that one. Not say anything yet, because nothing is confirmed. But, you know, that's in the future. So that, and of course, I think since the last time I spoke with you guys, we had the pay-per-view Hell in a Cell. I enjoyed the Taker-Lesnar Hell in a Cell match, but I definitely think the Wyatt-Roman Reigns bloodless one was actually better, believe it or not. And a lot of that did have to do with the ending. I mean, I'm digging the whole Wyatt family gaining power and against, you know, the Bros of Destruction thing, but yeah, Lesnar going over in the feud, I don't buy, and I have a problem with. I hate the way they kiss up the Lesnar. I think I've made that abundantly clear. But you had that, and it's generally a good pay-per-view. I mean, the opening with Cena losing to Alberto Del Rio, who, of course, by the way, now with Zeb Coulter as part of Mex Americans. I'm really digging that storyline, too. It's great to see Zeb Coulter back. I've missed him. I've missed him a lot. And I do like the storyline that they could probably be going forward with Jack Swagger and Alberto Del Rio. But yeah, I mean, I'm actually quite shocked that nobody like called. Well, I shouldn't be shocked. I did get a couple afterwards, but I expected a whole lot more sort of trolling from people like Matty J and TWK that Cena lost and lost cleanly. But I didn't get that strangely. Maybe it had to do with everybody knew he was leaving, and so it's like, maybe people didn't think too much. I know people thought a lot of it, but not too much. But, you know, again, I did actually enjoy it. My only issue with the match is I felt it was too short. But I did like the way, I mean, I think Backbreaker combined with a super kick, you know, was a great way to write Cena off. I mean, if WWE Creative was smart, you know, they would write him off by saying that he had a concussion and that they're keeping him off for his safety. That he wants to come back till he, you know, because again, they just had the Breaking Ground episode where, you know, they were showing Sammy Piscitelli, former Buccaneer, by the way. It's like, why doesn't that name sound familiar? And then they show him in his Buccaneer uniform, like, oh shit, it's him. So yeah, I actually have watched him play football. About how he had to sit out 3 weeks. Well, 3 weeks sounds just about enough time for him to have to miss Survivor Series and for him to basically be out a month. And then, of course, they're going to move forward that he needs to pass this test, and so on. So, but they're probably not going to do that because, you know, I think we've established for the most part that WWE Creative isn't that creative. So, no, at the end of the day, there's a lot of great things going on in WWE right now. NXT is kicking with Samoa Joe's heel turn, which was awesome. Asuka is just, holy fuck shit. I mean, if you missed Asuka's, like, blink and you miss it counter of a hand slap into an arm bar on Cameron, you have missed what may be one of the greatest maneuvers of the year. I mean, literally, that's how great she is, that literally just the mere fact of a simple arm bar, cross arm bar counter of a slap. It's like, has everybody up in arms and maybe one of the best maneuvers of the year. Speaking of some of the best maneuvers of the year, I think it was on that same... Yeah, it's on that same NXT episode. It's actually the last NXT episode that was on that, I believe. Was that one or the one before? Either way, what may be the best tag team match of the year, Jason Jordan, Chad Gable, or as we like to call him, Gable... Jordan, Gable, Jordan, versus Johnny, Mr. Wrestling, or Johnny Wrestling, excuse me, Johnny Gargano, and I'm going to completely butcher his name, Chupa, Ciampa, Tomasa Ciampa, excuse me, I hope I said it right. I was, like, searching for the way to say it there. My God, this was a great tag team match. I mean, between that and between the one they had with Corbin and Rhino. Holy God. And now they're challenging the Ascension. Oh, my God, I can't wait to watch these guys. I mean, the tag team division in NXT is awesome. Tag team wrestling is now better. The Usos are back. You have the New Day. You have the Dudleys. The Lucha Dragons are being pushed. Oh my God. It's awesome. And of course you have Stardust and the Ascension and his little fat. I keep telling people, like, if WWE was smart, they'd do something with all these little factions they have. And have like something like a three-way turn, a six-man tournament. In the same way that, you know, Chikara does. But I think there's a lot of great things to look forward to. Before I finally do get into the pay-per-view proper of ECW, one more thing to bring up. And that is that I've kind of made a decision. Like I said, you may be seeing sparingly episodes of this. I'm going to try to get three out this month. And I'm going to try to get at least two out in December, covering two different Starcades. But with that being said, starting in January, I'm going to be doing something different with this show. And I'm not going to do pay-per-views anymore. Or what I mean is I'm not going to stop reviewing pay-per-views anymore. I'm going to still be doing that. But I'm going to do something to fill in this sort of first segment. Because I kind of talk news, I kind of talk all this stuff. What I've decided to do is, again, like I've said before, I came into wrestling kind of late 1999, so I never really watched the year of 98. So I've kind of made the decision that starting in January, I'm going to watch every Monday night, basically, or every week, I'm going to watch a single episode of Raw, going in order from, you know, from January to February, and hopefully if I can get an episode out each every week, I will, by the end of the year, I will have covered every episode of Monday Night Raw from 1998. So, that is going to be my plan. Let's get on to our main topic of the evening, ECW Anarchy Rules 1999, which took place on September 19th, 1999, from the Odom Expo Center in Villa Park, Illinois. Your color commentators for the evening are the legendary Joey Styles and Cyrus. It had an attendance of 6,000 as they came to see the main event of Taz versus Masato Tanaka, Tommy Dreamer and Raven versus Steve Corino and a partner of his choice, and of course Rob Van Dam in a defending the ECW World Television title. Ladies and gentlemen, this is ECW Anarchy Rules 1999. Welcome back, and we'll get right into it. First, let's start off. There was a dark match for the evening. We had Danning, Doring, and Roadkill with Miss Congeniality, a.k.a. Lita, defeating the new dangerous alliance of Billy Wiles and C.W. Anderson. I'm actually looking forward to when I finally get to see... I've actually never seen C.W. Anderson wrestle. And at some point, I'm going to get to a pay-per-view where he wrestles on it. And I'm looking very forward to watching him wrestle. I mean, I know it's strange. Like, all these years, I've never seen him wrestle. I'm looking forward to seeing him wrestle. Maybe I have seen him wrestle, and I just didn't know it was him. But, you know. It's just very... from my perspective, it's just... I've not seen him. But our first official match was Lance Storm with his own personal bitch, Dawn Marie, versus Jerry Lynn. Oh my God. And I don't mean oh my God in weapons and blood. I mean oh my God. You want to see wrestling perfection. Like, this is one of the best wrestling matches I've ever seen. That's how good this match was. Like, just constant energy, constant back and forth, constant mixing. I mean, Lance Storm and Jerry Lynn, they didn't put on a clinic. No. They painted a masterpiece. I mean, just a thing of absolute beauty. And again, this kind of goes to maybe a bit of criticism that ECW did have for some of these little more wrestling matches, is they didn't quite have the build-up that... like, if this had a lot more build-up, like, if this was, like, for a championship match, it would be all that much more better. But even still, this was just... this was a Picasso. This was a masterpiece painted by two of the greatest wrestlers that ever lived, in Lance Storm and Jerry Lynn. I mean, just... back and forth, and the only thing that kind of takes it a bit down for me is, unfortunately, Jerry Lynn's injury, or either he sold it. I mean, if he was selling, he sold it goddamn well. I don't know if he was selling it, and I think ultimately it led to the more quicker pace, because, and again, this is one of the reasons I give it to him, because, like, I can't tell if it was scheduled or booked to end that way, or booked for Lance Storm to go over, or not, or if it was something improv because, you know, Lynn got injured with the, you know, the three-quarter Nelson pin, which just seemed like I'm out of nowhere. And it's, again, one of the criticisms I sometimes have of ECW, especially of good ECW matches, where, you know, pinfalls come seemingly out of nowhere. But, like, there are surprise pinfalls where there's a buildup of tension to it. It just didn't seem like there was that buildup of tension there. So, like, it just made the pinfall just really come out of nowhere. I'm like, wait a minute, that's it? It's like, but I was enjoying this match. It's like, you don't want the match to end. And I guess that's also, you can say, a praise of this match. It's like, I didn't want it to end. I wanted to continue all night long watching Lance Storm and Jerry Lynn. So, I mean, regardless of what else I think of this pay-per-view, you want to see a wrestling masterpiece? Watch Anarchy Rules 1999 and watch Lance Storm and Jerry Lynn. Now, our next bout kind of turned into a huge clusterfuck. It was supposed to be Jazz facing Simon Diamond. It ended up being somehow turning kind of into a three-way, where it was Simon Diamond, Tom Marquez, and Tony DeVito versus Jazz, Chris Chetty, and Nova, who, of course, you also may know as Simon Dean, or remember as Simon Dean. But, and then that got messed up by Danny Doreen and Roadkill, like, stormed. And then I think C.W. Anderson and Billy Wiles came down and, oh, hell broke loose. And then that's when New Jack's music hit, and New Jack came and saved the day and broke up the clusterfuck. By far, this was the worst segment of the evening, because I don't think anybody had a goddamn clue to what was going the fuck on. Yeah. Huge clusterfuck. Thank God, I can't believe I'm saying this, in regards to a clusterfuck, but for once, he didn't cause it, and thank God New Jack was there to break up the clusterfuck and at least give me some enjoyment of that match. Again, I don't know if it was booked that way or it just happened quasi-organically, but it was a clusterfuck. Our next match is another great, masterpiece. This is a pre-match of what would happen. Let's see, was it 1999 to 6 years later? Although they've done numerous of these at these times, but of course, WWE fans might remember it more fondly for ECW One Night Stand 2005 one. But we have an international three-way dance as Yoshihiro Tajiri faces Super Crazy versus Little Guido with Big Sally Grazioni. Of course, Little Guido, being Nunzio, part of the FBI, the full-blooded Italians. This was a great match. Little Guido gets pinned first, and then, it's up between Super Crazy and Tajiri. But this match was just incredible back and forth. Wrestlers, again, that great, fantastic, chained action just back and forth. And the kicks from Tajiri were super stiff. And you could feel them as they recurvated around the arena. Super Crazy was just crazy. The dives and everything in this match just flew organically. Like, you felt like, oh my god, like, you don't know which way it's going. Then Super Crazy gets ultimately pinned. Super Crazy pinned. Before that, of course, Little Guido gets eliminated. So just great back and forth into Jerry. I can't remember how Tajiri won it, but it was brutal. It's like when he hit that, it's like he knew it was over. I believe it was with a buzzsaw kick. I could be wrong. Great match. Before I go any further, I would be regret without mentioning the awesome commentary that happens throughout this pay-per-view by Joey Styles and Cyrus. And just the great, you know, Cyrus is doing great heel commentary, and the back and forth between them was awesome. And it just had me in stitches and laughing the entire night. And it made the pay-per-view even that more fun. Our next match is just incredible, with the sexiest man on earth, Jason, or sexiest man alive, either one, take your pick, it pretty much means the same thing, versus Sabu with Bill Alfonso. I really enjoyed this match, great back and forth, no botches by Sabu. I think Just Incredible botched more in this match than Sabu did. Which, you know, that should tell you something about yourself when you botch more than Sabu. But, you know, Sabu really doesn't botch in this match. It's really great back and forth contest. It's, again, so far we've seen, like, just the gambit of what made ECW great at this time. Like, you start off with a pure wrestling match, then you have this international flavored great wrestling match. Of course, you had the clusterfuck, but, you know, at some point there's going to be a clusterfuck somewhere in the ECW match. And then you have this sort of more traditional ECW extreme match that's also fun and entertaining. We'd see another one of these later in the night. But, yeah, just, oh, very fun, very entertaining, very enjoyable match. Just Incredible gets the win with That's Incredible on the steel chair. But it's like they built up to it and it felt really good to see that build up to it. So just another great match. Then we have what was supposed to be Taz versus Masato Tanaka. Now, I love what they did storyline. Even like I hadn't watched build up to the storyline, like they did a great job of basically telling the storyline when Mike Awesome and Judge Jeff Jones show up. The storyline here being that they, and hyping this title match between Taz and Masato Tanaka, they were showing his, I believe it's his FMA, Frontier Martial Arts footage where, you know, I believe he was champion, and basically where him and Mike Awesome were wrestling over and feuding. And so they were showing a lot of footage of Mike Awesome getting beat. So Mike Awesome shows up, and Taz is like, "No, I'm the baddest motherfucker on earth. You want some? Come get some. I can beat anybody in the belt." And of course, and this whole thing where the god, Paul Heyman, comes out. It's like, "Paul Heyman, you son of a bitch. Let him in the ring. Like, you want it? I think these people want a three-way dance. You want it? You've got it." And it turns into a three-way dance. And this match was incredible from front to end. It starts off with Taz just tearing the house down. Great back and forth. But then Tanaka and Awesome are able to change it and basically do a series of setups to finishing moves and a splash, a couple of splashes, and a double cover by both Tanaka and Awesome. They pin Taz. And there's another thing that also happened during this match in the lead up to this, and that, you know, I think the writing was on the wall that this was Taz's last match, or one of his last matches that he was leaving soon, because there was a lot of UCLA. In that sense, this crowd exemplified why I both love and hate a Chicago crowd. Because in one instance, they just wouldn't shut up when you sold out. And it drove me crazy. But when he lost, everybody knew he had basically lost clean and just set up the other guys and set up. And he walked out. And basically, everybody was on the ramp to meet him. And, like, people were cheering for him. And it's like, yo, this was Taz's send-off. Like, and Taz had did so much for the company. And so to see him get that respect that he earned in bucketfuls, it was like a beautiful thing to see. And then they kind of went in the back. And he would come out later after the match and just and hand Mike Awesome and basically sort of pass the ECW leadership torch to him, which unfortunately Mike Awesome would, in a couple months, piss all over. But, yeah, that's a whole nother story for a different day. But at the time, again, he would hand it to Awesome when he won. Spoiler alert, Mike Awesome wins. And the thing is, once it got down to a one-on-one contest, again, it turned into one of those classic Masato Tanaka, Mike Awesome bouts. Like, the thing I love about Tanaka and Awesome's feud is that you know what all the spots are. They really do limited move base. Like, variation. Mike Awesome just does variations on power bombs and has his big splash, you know, his suicide dives and his big splash. And just uses chairs to pound you in submission. Tanaka, rolling elbow, tornado DDT, reverse tornado DDT, diamond dust, the jack to jaw, and he does power bombs too. And they use tables and chairs. It's like, you've seen it all before. But it's just one of those feuds to where even though you know what each one's going to do to the other and what the spots are going to be, it's always entertaining. And it's no different here. And it was just as entertaining here. Just as entertaining as when we watched Heatwave 1999. And it was just back and forth. And great back and forth. And the setup to, you know, I believe it was the power bomb, and then of course the splash pinfall to get the win, with Mike Awesome becoming your new ECW World Heavyweight Champion. And like I said, Taz coming back out, getting the title, and then giving it to him, raising his hand. Just such a class act. It shows you how much Taz cared for the company. And then, you know, him getting his proper sort of send-off there with the crowd, with the boys coming out. And, you know, hugging him, and it's just, it was a great sight to see, and definitely one of the matches of the night, as far as I'm concerned. Our next match, though, didn't last as long as it would actually be the shortest match of the evening. I'm actually looking at how the Wikipedia has it. They actually has Jazz and Tony Marquez as a single match. It didn't last long, but again, like I said, that was a clusterfuck. It was a singles match that went into a tag match, that went to a six-man tag, that went into different things. So I really wouldn't say that's a match. There's a lot of clusterfucks happening at the same time. But as far as official matches, this would be the longest. As Tommy Dreamer and Raven with Francine defended the ECW World Tag Team Championships against Steve Corino and a partner of his choice, which turned out to be Rhino. Went very quickly. I can't remember who came out. I want to say somebody came out and gave a little help to them. But I just remember them hitting stereo DDTs and picking up the pinfall over Steve Corino and Rhino. There's so much more to say. It was more about the storyline because there was this big sort of packaged sort of promo before the match with Raven, where Raven just ran down the history that he had with Tommy Dreamer. Basically saying, like, he's sort of back now to make your life a living hell. You know, you think you have everything set, but I'm here to take it all away from you while being your tag team partner. And so that was, it just felt like the whole thing was more build up towards their storyline. Wherever that may have taken them, because I can't remember off the top of my head. But it was just very short, and, you know, the fans liked it. I mean, it wasn't awful. I enjoyed it. It just was very short. I don't know if the 324 includes entrances, is what I'm saying. But that brings us to our final match of the night. Rob Van Dam versus what would turn out to be Balls Mahoney. Now, I say that because I'm trying to remember the name of the wrestler. Because I believe he was part of the group with Lance Storm and Just Incredible as part of the Impact Players. I believe he was a British wrestler, and it's Rob something. I can't remember the name. I'm sure somebody will send me an email or something telling me his name. I just can't remember it off the top of my head, and it doesn't have it on Wikipedia, actually. But it was initially supposed to be that, or him, to face RVD for the ECW World Television title. But, basically, Balls Mahoney and Axel Foley basically come out and beat his ass with a chair. And mind you, I think they're with Spike Dudley, too. And so, basically, Balls, gets a Taz and everything. They challenge RVD to a contest. And RVD accepts, and so it's now RVD versus Balls Mahoney for the ECW World Television Championship. I love this match. This was a great finale to the night. I think when a lot of people think of Balls Mahoney, they think of him certainly as what he's best known for, which is the chair swinging freak. And he's thought of for his hardcore chair style with the chair. But of course, brought more light in one of the recent podcasts that he was interviewed on. But he really does actually know how to wrestle. And if you want proof of this, and in fact, I'll sit here and say this, if you were to ask me to tell you who Balls Mahoney is and to point you to a match that would showcase just who Balls Mahoney is, this is the match I would point you to. Because he wrestled a great match. And I mean wrestle. I don't mean he swung chairs. He wrestled. He did heel kicks, suplexes. He even did his own version of the 5-star frog splash off the top rope. One of my favorite spots, though, is where RVD... And RVD slips, so he throws it back to Bill Alfonso. And then the spot is, he gives Alfonso the chair. He leaps onto the railing. Balls Mahoney is in the crowd. Alfonso throws the chair at Mahoney. He's supposed to hit basically the Van Daminator, which is the spot he's done before. But Mahoney, seeing it coming, as soon as he catches the chair, throws it right in the face of a diving RVD. It's like, oh, that was awesome. That was a thing of beauty. And then, of course, that 5-star frog splash. From Balls, oh my god, the big man can fly. And it was a great back and forth. Eventually, RVD hits the Van Daminator, which sets up the 5-star frog splash. But it was a great back and forth contest, and it was a great wrestling match. And again, like Sabu and Just Incredible, it was that sort of more ECW extremist style that had... It had hardcore in it, but it wasn't like blood and guts and gore. It was... a wrestling match with sort of hardcore elements added into it. And it's we'd consider the classic ECW style. And it was a great way to end the night. So, top three spots. Number one, like I said, the spot with the reversing the Van Daminator by Balls Mahoney. That has to be number three. Number two, because I'm trying to think. It's one of the things I've actually had struggles in doing this review is I was trying to struggle what are them, there's spots that I kind of remember, but it's damn it, I've forgotten already. There's a dive into the crowd by Super Crazy. And I'll tag that with RVD's very similar dive into the crowd on Balls Mahoney in the final match. But there's a spot where, Super Crazy dives, I think there's a moonsault into the crowd of Little Guido and Tajiri. That was awesome. But number one for me, splash and the whole sequence of events, the rolling elbow power bomb, I believe, into a splash. By Tanaka and awesome to pin Taz.
It's like, you know, if there was ever a way for a champion who really is the baddest man on the planet to go out, he has to go out by just having a sequence of finishers and, like, signature movers hit on him at the same time and be covered by two men. And it's just that and along with the ending applause. It was the perfect way to go out. As for my top three favorite matches, number three is RVD versus Rob Van Dam. Just a thing of beauty, and I definitely think it's worth checking out. Number two is that three-way dance for the ECW World Heavyweight title between Awesome, Tanaka, and Taz. It is a thing of beauty. Watch it. It's one of Taz's final matches, and it is a great match all the way through. But number one, that very first match of the evening, Lance Storm versus Jerry Lynn in what is an absolute masterpiece. And, this is going to my final thoughts on Anarchy Rules. This is sort of a great example of what we see here and why this is such a great pay-per-view. You have two matches, the beginning match and the ending match, that are both great. You have the big sort of heavyweight title match that's great. And alongside, for the most part, with the exception really of the clusterfuck, really good matches. I mean, even the short tag team match for the tag titles had a lot of build-up into it and still had some excitement with it. Just, even like I said, even the clusterfuck is ultimately ended up saved by New Jack coming out and beating everybody's ass. The night was exactly as it was advertised. It was Anarchy Rules. And from front to back, the card is stacked with great match after great match. It's fun to listen to. The crowd is just absolutely into the event. I mean, it's a Chicago crowd. And then, like I said, Joey Styles and Cyrus just kill it on commentary. They're awesome. This is one of the best pay-per-views I've seen. And it's from an ECW pay-per-view. It's like random money. Like, when ECW tries to talk about itself being more than just blood and gore, I think this pay-per-view is a perfect example of that. Because, I mean, there's blood, and there's hardcore, but there's not blood and guts. It's not like some of their other things where, like, cheese graters come into play. This is a great example of how ECW was a great wrestling company. Because you got a lot of great wrestling here, even from people that are looked upon traditionally as hardcore specialists, they put on great performances. So, quite frankly, I mean, really, the only thing that I have to is clusterfuck of that one segment. But outside of that, I mean, it's as close to perfection, I think, as ECW can get. Yeah, we did see perfection from ECW in One Night Stand 2005. And while it does, there is some of the epicness, because again, I mean, obvious reasons ECW come back in 2005, but this had epicness all its own, and it was a great event, great crowd, great color commentary, great everything. I give ECW Anarchy of Rules 1999 a 4.75 out of 5. I mean, that's how good it is. Like, it deserves that 0.25 to move it from 4.5 to 4.75. So, yeah, 4.75 out of 5 for ECW Anarchy Rules 1999. And that is it for this episode of CM2's Wrestling Reviews. I hope you enjoyed the show. If you have any emails or comments of any kind, remember there are several ways to contact the show. One, you can email us at AppSolutionNetwork132@gmail.com. That's AppSolutionNetwork132@gmail.com. And you can always leave a comment. At some point I'm going to get, probably put these hopefully on Stitcher and everything. Or once I get the RSS feed updated. I'm also hoping to put it on Google Music. So look forward to that. Also, you can find us on Facebook. You can find the Absolution Network on Facebook and leave us comments about the show there. by searching for the Absolution Network on Facebook.com. And, of course, you can always leave a comment on the website itself, which you can find at www.an.132productions.com. And, of course, make sure you check out all our other 132 Productions content that, of course, includes Tom's Prerogative, Tom's Top 5, Tom's Toonami D&D, the Intergalactic Graphic Review. There's a lot of stuff there that I do personally that kind of put on the whole back burner. I'm working through stuff because, again, I now moved to a new college and I'm trying. And I think if things ultimately go the way I go, I'm looking forward to, like, sort of, not rebranding, but, like, relaunching with renewed vigor at the beginning of the 2016 to get back on track. So you may not see a lot of stuff in the next 2 months. I want to do definitely some more stuff, but, you know, I may just focus on one show for right now as I go into 2016 and prepare. Check out all that stuff, of course, John Ramos and the Toku videos. Shin Tagger Curl, his wrestling reviews, including his Raw reviews of his own. And, of course, video game videos and everything. Check that all out on the site, at www.an.132productions.com. And, of course, make sure you check out all our friends are on the side part of the site. That, of course, include Michael Bailey and Views in the Long Box, along with From Crisis to Crisis, that he does with his friend Jeffrey Deller. Spidey Dude and the Clone Sucker Chronicles. Steven Psyker, Major Spoilers Podcast. And, of course, Scott Gardner and Two Freaks Podcasting Network, along with many others. And that is it for this episode of CM Juice Wrestling Reviews, episode 57. Next episode, hopefully I'm going to see if I get out next week so I can have some time to review that Survivor Series 98. But we're staying ECW, and we're going back to 1997 for a November to remember. So, until next time, my wrestling fans, I want you to remember one goddamn thing about me. CM Jew. I'm the best Jew in the world! You're all that I have and you're all that I need. Each and every day I pray to get to know you. Please wanna be close to you. Yes, I'm so hungry. You're like water for my soul when it gets thirsty. Without you, there's no me or the air that I breathe. Sometimes the world is dark and I just can't see. With these demons around all around, I bring me down to negative vibes. But I believe, yes, I believe, I said I believe. I stand among two feet, one big blood down on one knee. I fight with all of my might to get these demons to flee. Hashem's rays, fire blaze, burn bright in, I believe. Hashem's rays, fire blaze, burn bright in, I believe. Out of darkness comes light, twilight and through the heights. Crown lights burning up, out of through the twilight. So thank you to my God, now I finally got it right. And I fight with all of my heart and all of my soul and all of my mind. I give myself to you from the essence of my being and I sing to my God. Songs of love and healing, I want Mashiach now. Time it starts a feeling. What's this feeling? My love will be born in a ceiling. I give myself to you from the essence of my being and I sing to my God. Songs of love and healing, I want Mashiach now. Stripping away the layers and reveal your soul. You gotta give yourself up and then you become whole. You're a slave to yourself and them don't even know. Them wanna live that fast life, but you're dreaming.